from the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Oh my goodness, I wasn't ready. Oh, all right. Almost wasn't ready. Kind of like in radio, when you're almost not ready, it's just like you're not ready because you're not ready. Well, I am now, and good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. My name is Patrick Timpone, but that doesn't matter. I'm just the host. The star of the show on Wednesday is Andrew Goss. He's a currency historian. He's a nationally recognized one at that, and he gets around, and he's working on his third book, his first two, The Secret World of Money and Uncle Sam Cooks the Books. You can still buy on Amazon, and if you buy it at the wrong place, you can spend $200 and get one. But so don't do that. I guess Andrew probably would have a few lying around if you'd like to get one from him. Anyway, here's the latest book that he's working on is the Monetary History of the United States. Is that right? Monetary History.
Working title.
Working title, yeah.
It's called The Working Title.
The Working Title, yeah. Well, how are you doing, Mr. Goss?
I'm done with the documentary, so I'm back to the book.
I see. You have a documentary.
Well, you never realize how long those things take.
Yeah.
Man, months and months and hours.
Just give a little plug of the quick sketch of the documentary. It's called The Four Presidents.
Four Presidents examines the assassination of each of the four presidents kind of on a thumbnail. You know, it's not real in-depth with the conspiracies and whatnot. But I leave it to the reader or the watcher to decide if it's a mere coincidence that the only four presidents that were assassinated were the four presidents that attempted to change the monetary system. So,
really?
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty curial. That's mercurial at best, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is.
And I don't really believe in coincidences. I don't know about you.
No.
On planet Earth, I just don't. So, it's the four. And the four were?
Start at the beginning. The first president really assassinated in office. I tried to make it five. I drew in the case for John Tyler, but okay, so we have the one everyone knows, Abraham Lincoln, of course, and his lieutenant, James Garfield, and then there's William McKinley, and of course, John F. Kennedy.
John F. Kennedy?
So those are the four. And they all had very intricate involvement with the monetary system.
With kind of poking the giant in the eye.
So to speak,
right?
Yeah, they ran out of their lane. So, you know.
they strayed off the reservation.
They did, yeah. If they would have just left things alone the way they were, each, of course, if you deficit spend, you spend money that you don't have, then you borrow it from the banks. That was always the way it was done.
Yeah.
And if you need financing in any way, you let banks handle it. And these four presidents thought, well, what's the treasury for?
I mean, we have our own treasury.
Yeah.
We have our own mint.
And we have, yes, exactly.
We have our own dollar printing machine.
Yeah, precisely.
We have computers. I mean,
yes.
Why should we borrow the money?
Especially in the age of banknotes. And then, of course, now in the age of electronic money transfers, the question really begs, why do we need a middleman in there to handle the money, so to speak? So Congress spends $1 billion it doesn't have. Rather than merely creating it and putting it into circulation, they let a private bank create the money, and then they borrow it from those guys at interest.
That is a fact that is so, I mean, so like amazing, like a proverbial 12 million pound elephant in the room that nobody really even talks about.
Well, four presidents talked about it.
Four presidents talked about it. They did something about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's
the key.
Yeah, they did.
Right? It's one thing to talk. It's quite another to do something. And that's what these four had in common. They did something.
But you didn't even mention Jackson.
Well, Jackson wasn't killed. He was shot at.
Oh, I see. These other four were actually killed.
That's right.
But Jackson was shot at because he took over the He took over the bank, right?
Yes, he died with bullets in his body. He had one assailant attack him with two pistols, both of them misfired.
Misfired.
Which is what many led them to believe he was a you know, guided by divine providence. It's just a miracle that Jackson survived.
And he actually ran on the platform in 18...
Vote for me, I'll kill this bank.
Yeah, he called it a giant squid or something.
No, he called it that. Matt Taibbi.
That Matt Taibbi.
Matt Taibbi, 100 years later, 150 years later, called it a giant squid.
Oh, no, Rolling Stone, yeah.
Yeah, he called it a den of vipers.
A den of vipers, yeah.
Which in his day was pretty bad.
Pretty bad, yeah.
That was a bad thing.
So think about that. That would be like President Trump.
Coming out.
Doing a news conference.
The Federal Reserve is a den of vipers, and by the almighty God, I will rout them out.
I will no longer borrow the money. Sorry. We're just going to print it ourselves.
Vote for me.
And Americans
will
be drinking their coffee going, what?
What?
We don't do that now?
Yeah.
We don't do that now?
Right.
I mean, everybody thinks that.
Well, it was obfuscated, and I think the first 20 years of my mission on Earth.
Yeah.
To inform people of their plight, as Mr. Kennedy put it, that was the bulk of my argument.
What are we doing?
It was the Federal Reserve is not a part of the government.
But it's federal, Andrew Gross. Come on,
it's
federal.
It's a reserve. Look here.
I mean, look at
it. You ask them, and they would tell you that they're public, because everyone would always ask the Federal Reserve Board. The Federal Reserve Board, headquartered in Washington, D.C. Are you a government agency? Of course.
Of course, yeah.
Of course. Here, we all work for the government. We're on government property. This is our government employee paycheck. So we are indeed a part of the government. By the early 80s, though, I was making headway. Folks were starting to understand that the Federal Reserve was, in fact, a cartel of privately owned banks.
You're talking about the Federal Reserve Bank of New York.
Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis,
all
Federal Reserve
owned by
Bank
private
of Kansas
banks.
City. That's right.
All owned by private banks.
In the Hamiltonian pattern, they involved all of the big banks into jointly owning their district or their region's central bank. And then they had the 12 central banks report back to the one in New York. And in this fashion, they controlled the banking system of the United States from the bottom up and have for quite a long time now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you hear the term all the time. Well, the government just prints the money, right, that people say.
No question about
it. They do.
Over $100 billion extra money last year, $100 billion in fresh paper money was created and put into circulation.
How many?
$100 billion.
When? Over what period?
Last year.
Last year.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's not a lot.
Over the last year, $100 billion. Oh, it is a lot, Patrick.
No, wait, whoa. No. No, the Treasury was in the red $1 trillion.
Okay, let's go to the H4
release. Okay, so that brings us right to what we're going to do this morning. Okay,
yeah.
So what we told folks that we were going to kind of audit the Fed, our own version, not the Ron Paul
version.
Yeah,
no way you can audit
the
Fed.
No way you can really audit them. However, the Fed does put out a release called the H4-1 release all mm-hmm. the time, and they update it. And it's no conspiracy. I mean, you don't have to be Alex Jones to know this stuff. Just kidding. What you do is you just go on the interweb.
I love the interweb.
That Al Gore invented. And you go to, and we have a link right on the front page. So if you look there right on the front page and open it into a new tab so you don't clunk out the play button, and you can follow along.
Yeah.
And it is, but if
for those who don't have a link,
it's federalreserve.gov.
Correct.
Oh, actually, just Google H41.
Release.
And
otherwise, you'll wind up with a Hummer.
That'll take you right. So this is from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, correct?
Correct.
Now, why? So they are just the big daddy of the 12 feds.
Of the 12 banks, one can be the fiscal agent for the United States government.
And that means what, fiscal agent?
Well, the business manager.
Oh, okay.
Imagine you're a famous celebrity and you have hundreds of millions of dollars.
I can imagine, yeah.
Hey, imagine. Go ahead, close your eyes. You hire a business.
I'm in one of those big, long cars.
Yes.
I got little drinks in front of me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You hire a business manager, a fiscal agent, an accountant.
Yeah.
You know, you live in hotels and tear out the walls, and then you have accountants pay for it all.
I used to do that.
That's Joe Walsh. Yes. Okay.
Mel Gibson. Sorry.
No, sorry. No, credit to Joe Walsh on that one. So you have a fiscal agent who pays your bills.
Yeah.
Takes your money, mm-hmm. your income, mm-hmm. and accounts for it to you, presumably. Depends how drunk you are in case of Joe Walsh. So a little mismanagement could occur, but this is why the Federal Reserve Bank of New York is the most powerful among the 12 banks in the Federal Reserve System, because they are the fiscal agent for the federal government, the central bank of the United States.
So,
are we on that page?
I'm right there. And
for those who aren't, it's federalreserve.gov/releases.
Releases.
H41.
H41 release, and we're going to go through it so you can look at it from time to time when we're on the show, and you can follow the bouncing ball.
Love the headline.
What's that?
Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System, the Federal Reserve, the Central Bank of the United States, provides the nation with a safe, flexible, and stable monetary and financial system.
Good for them.
That's their task. Mm-hmm. And I love the word flexible.
Flexible. That's right. Which means you can create money on a Dell 481.42 computer.
Or you could take it away.
Or you can take it away. And you can monetize debt. And that's the key word that a lot of people don't understand. But monetizing debt. Now talk to us like we're a young child or a golden retriever here so you don't lose us. What does that mean?
Well, the Fed's function was originally envisioned as providing, a fiscal agent for the United States government. And there are times when the government needs money that it doesn't have.
I'm shocked.
So it has to turn to the people. Yeah, especially
President
today.
Obama, $10 trillion in 8 years.
Don't blame President Obama.
No, I know. I'm just saying that I'm not picking on him.
He doubled the national debt.
From $10 trillion to $20 trillion in 8 years. And
George Bush doubled the national debt.
And Mr. Trump's on track to do the same.
Doubled the national debt. Yeah, none of them are immune.
No. It's not a left or right thing.
No, it's not. No. In case, as much as I dislike President Obama and his policies, it was not his fault that he doubled the national debt. Of course, he could have taken his foot off the gas a little bit.
Yeah, but they're not going to do it.
We won't talk about that.
Okay, so monetize debt.
Yes.
So in other words, the governments go short maybe $1 trillion a year like they have, and where does that money come from?
Well, yeah, they have to turn to the people and borrow it. So the question was asked, well, what if the people don't want to lend it to them? Well, then we just give the Federal Reserve the power to create the money. Monetize the debt.
So you're saying when the Federal Reserve Bank of New York buys a treasury bond, which they do, they have their share.
They do it every day.
And we're going to look at their balance sheet to see how much they own.
Yeah.
They literally create money on a computer.
They don't have to.
Digits.
But they can.
But they can. They don't have to, but they can.
Correct.
And they exchange it for, say, a $1 million treasury 10-year treasury or whatever, 3-year.
Bond, note, or bill.
Or bill. They exchange it.
Correct.
You send me yours, I'll send you mine, and there you go.
That's right. Now, if they do this from the existing pool of money, then it's not inflationary.
So you're not expanding the monetary.
Correct.
The amount of dollars out there.
That's right. If you let every pension fund and every individual in the United States, or even foreign, buy your treasury bonds from their existing supply of money, then necessarily that doesn't create inflation.
No.
Now, as the economists would train us to know, this does have a crowding out effect. In other words, if the federal government is borrowing all the extra money in circulation, well, that doesn't leave enough for Joe and Pop Donut shop on Main Street, to expand their business. So small business, large business, other business is unable to borrow if the federal government has their elbows slinging in the market and taking up every dollar that's extra. Every dollar that someone isn't using is being borrowed by the federal government. And so you can either allow businesses to borrow and stimulate an economy, or you can crowd them out and make it impossible for them to borrow because, the government is the number one debtor always preferred over a private company. They can't go bankrupt.
Kind of lost you a little bit. Let me go back. So if the New York Fed creates the money and buys a lot of the stuff, then the pension funds can't buy some of these. What happens?
Well, that's not the case.
Okay, so
the New York Fed isn't creating the money.
Not when CalPERS in California buys $20 million worth of treasuries. That's coming out of CalPERS
retirement funds.
Retirement funds. Okay, yeah. So go from there.
And where individuals are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Grandma used to buy a treasury, right? And put it in her sock drawer.
There you go.
Okay, so.
Well, if you're CVS or some other big corporation and you want to borrow money, you can't. There's none left.
Now, wait a minute. So I'm CVS, and I say I need, or I'm Blockbuster during the day when I was going short dollars, and I needed to borrow $100 million to keep my... I don't understand why.
Because, in a fixed supply of money, which is what there is in that scenario, the Fed isn't creating any money. They're not monetizing any debt. So the pool is fixed. There's only so much money.
I see. So Blockbuster goes out and needs $100 million. If there's no monetization going on, it's got to come out from somewhere.
The existing supply.
Yeah, but if
all of that money is being loaned to the federal government, why, then there's none left over. It creates a crowding out effect. That's what economists know.
Of all that money is lent to the government.
Correct.
I'm missing something.
What are you missing, Pat?
Well, if all that money is lent...
All the money that's already in existence.
Oh, okay.
Not newly created.
So the pension funds
the
and
Fed
all this stuff.
Of course, the Fed can simply create money at its whim. Yeah. But it has to contend with the inflationary forces that ensue. So if the Fed merely created money every time somebody wanted to borrow it, soon the worthlessness of money would be revealed.
You think?
You need regulation, as John Maynard Keynes put it. You need to regulate the amount of money that's coming over the dam into the general economy.
But you have taught us, Carnac of the money world, that if somebody goes to Wells Fargo and say, I would like a $500,000 mortgage, I've got this great house on whatever, Coney Island or somewhere, they create that money.
Subject to the existing pool and the accounting and reserve requirements. So, yes, that is absolutely true, Patrick.
They do create the money.
It has limits. It has limits. It's not unlimited. And the limits are how much money is on deposit the banks have. So if all of that money that they have on deposit is tied up in government bonds, bills, or notes, then there is none left. So if you want to examine that further, the crowding out effect, as it's known in classical economics, the idea that, a government only has a certain amount of money to spend, therefore, by extension, an economy only has a certain amount of money to spend, and they can either spend it on guns or they can spend it on butter. That's within their existing pool. There's only so much money. It's only a 21st century phenomenon that unlimited quantities of money appear to be available.
That's what you taught us, the Monetary Decontrol Act, where they could monetize anything.
Correct.
Car notes, Visa cards,
correct.
Whatever.
Which creates a new monetary metric, P, potential money.
Potential money, right.
Correct. So it's not money now. Now it's sitting, it's a car loan. It's a pool of mortgages. It's a whatever it is. It takes up a space in the monetary system and holds a certain quantity of money. So what that means is that if somebody took a bunch of car loans and bundled them together and said, okay, we're offering these to investors, those investors pull money from the existing pool and they buy these car notes. Now all of a sudden there's a problem in the economy and the investors decide they're going to sell the car notes. So they could sell for 10, 20, 50, 90, 100 cents on the dollar if the demand is there or not there. Or the Federal Reserve
could buy them.
Can monetize them, correct.
Which they did in 2007 with the mortgage-backed securities.
Right? And made this maneuver pretty well known. Prior to that maneuver, this quantitative easing that they engaged in, No one even knew it was within their purview. It was within their power.
Really?
People didn't understand
you
how
knew
that
it.
Worked.
You
well,
knew.
I'm a geek.
But even in 2007, where they did the famous TARP thing of, what, $700 billion?
They tried to hide that,
everybody,
Patrick.
Everybody thought that the government...
The government was putting up the
but
money.
But it didn't.
Correct.
No.
Well, indirectly it did. It was on the hook for it, that's for sure.
But the Fed created
it. But it was after that that the Fed intervened directly. They didn't ask or wait for Congress.
Really?
Right. Well, that's when they opened their window and said, you know, we're buying treasury bonds, treasury bills, mortgage-backed securities, whatever you have, bring it to the window.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what the whole Warren Buffett thing with J.P. Morgan and all that stuff went on, right?
Mm-hmm. The quantitative easing began, and so then every
what
month...
What a nice word for printing money, isn't it? Quantitative easing. Does it sound elegant?
Yes, it does.
It is legal, but it does...
It provides us a flexible monetary system.
My favorite.
Yeah.
I wish I had one of those.
So, how do we follow along?
So, we're going to now follow along the bouncing ball, because you have the H4-1
release.
And we're going to show you what's on the books of the New York Fed. And
sure.
Just as a little backdrop, this is kind of fun. Timothy Geithner, former Treasury Secretary, where did he work before he was Treasury Secretary?
Was it J.P. Goldman Morgan Sachs?
But he was also president of the New York Fed.
Oh, of course.
Oh, well, that's the whole point of the question. Okay. What about Hank
James
Paulson?
Dudley, yeah.
James Dudley.
Hank Paulson.
They were all head of the New York Fed.
That's right. Yeah, it's a very powerful position.
Yeah, because then you get to go up to the gov and then...
Yeah, you're the real kingmaker if you're the president of the New York Fed.
More so than the Mnuchin, right?
I think so, yeah.
Who's the president of the New York Fed today?
I think it is Dudley is president now.
And who's Dudley used to be?
J.P. Morgan.
J.P. Morgan, right? J.P.
Yeah.
Morgan.
It's always one of the boys. The primary owners of the New York Fed, I know we haven't gotten into that for a while, but I actually published a shareholder report that was an updated piece of Eustace Mullen's work.
It's still on One Radio Network.
Is it? Okay. So because a lot of the information that's out there on the interweb today is simply plagiarism of Eustace Mullen's.
Of course. Most of it is.
Yeah. Mullen's wrote in his book, Secrets of the Federal Reserve, the original shareholders of the New York Fed.
Yeah.
And
this was in what year?
Oh, goodness.
50?
I compiled that research in the mid to late 50s.
Right.
But one thing that I learned from Eustace, giving him his due credit, was, you know, that changes, obviously. And how do you determine who the owners of the Fed are? Well, you determine them by looking at the banks within their district and the number of shares that the bank owns and who runs those banks. And then, of course, the interlocking directorships among the banks themselves,
mm-hmm.
where one guy works on the board of two banks, et cetera. So this updated research, although it's kind of stale now.
It's 10 years old.
10 years old,
When you did that for us, yeah.
Maybe I'll do another one day.
That'd be kind of fun.
Hey, yeah, in my, you know what I'll do? In my spare time,
yeah,
Patrick.
Right. Okay. So what we'll do is I'm going to put a link to that list that Andrew made, and I think it was in... When was that?
It's a while.
Yeah,
it's
10 years ago, maybe. And we'll put it on the show page of this podcast.
But you can get it from this conspiracy who's very open and publishes a balance sheet. So you can ask the Fed for it and probably come up with it.
Oh, really? You can just write them and say, tell me
sure.
who owned you?
Yeah. I've been doing it a long time,
but
writing.
But just for a conversation, it is the big banks, the usual suspects.
Yeah.
Like
Bank of America,
Goldman
J.P.
Sachs.
Morgan, Goldman, which just recently became a bank. They've only been a bank for 10 years.
These are all owners of the New York Fed that we're going to audit here. Who else? HSBC,
Shanghai Bank Corp.
Those little silly Chinese people, what are they doing in there?
People's Bank of China.
Whoops. Yeah. New York Mellon, that's a big one, yeah.
Bank of New York Mellon. Alexander Hamilton's bank.
It's a moldy oldie. We love that old money, man. The smell of mahogany.
Deep money there. Deep money. Yeah. So, and this has really been going on since the founding of the Republic.
Yeah.
That, you know, the muckety-mucks, the key players, would own the nation's central bank. It's my belief that this is why the phrase to emit bills of credit was removed from the Articles of Confederation when it was contemplated for the Constitution. So they lifted most of the language, but then left out that one power that was given to the early Congress, which was the power to create its own money. These boys understood. They gave themselves in the Articles of Confederation the right to, quote, emit bills of credit. In layman's term, that meant print their own money.
Wow.
And that was so taken away.
When they did the Constitution,
they pulled that out.
They pulled it out.
At the insistence of the hero of the finance system, Alexander Hamilton. Did you detect the sarcasm dripping off my voice? I really believe Alexander Hamilton did more damage to the U.S. monetary system than good. You know, the basic precepts of what he was doing, national debt, as he called it, it can be a national blessing. So, and I mean, certainly he had his pluses. There were pluses to the system, but the minuses, the costs were much too great. And it's put us where we are today, where we defeated the checks and balances in the Constitution that sort of made Congress aware and responsible to the people for their wants and needs. And so if the people said, hey, let's go fight a war, and Congress said, all right, we're going to declare war, then the people funded it through buying liberty bonds and war bonds and loaning their money to the government. But in the case of an unpopular war, an unpopular program, the checks and balances in the Constitution were removed in that Congress could go ahead and spend all the money it wanted, no matter what the people thought, because they had the ability to turn to this central bank, this private bank, and borrow on the nation's credit. And boy, they've done that. So maybe it's a good time to look at the national debt. For those who don't know what it is, it's the debt to the penny, the bonded debt of the United States. And you can find that at debt to the penny. Again, the federal government publishes that. I don't know if you have you looked at that lately?
Not lately, no.
Yes.
It's about 20 trillion. I'll do it during the
commercial. No, it was 20 when President Obama.
Oh, debt to the penny. All right.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay, so one other thing before we do a break, and then we're going to get into an audit at the Fed, is when any money is created, quantitative easing, or if the Treasury would have had the power to do it and they would have just printed it without debt,
correct.
That would have been a tax on everybody that's using
that's
the debt,
correct?
Because
it's the most efficient method of taxes.
Yeah, that's so. But it's kind of even because everybody that uses dollars loses a little bit every time you create more of them.
And, correct.
And kind of, sort of, but not.
And the collection mechanism doesn't require a swarm of agents that was released into the economy to inquire after our business.
You know, I beg your pardon. You're not referring to the government, the one we love.
We love, yes.
Those Internal Revenue dudes?
Infernal, I thought that was.
Infernal Revenue.
Is it internal?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
So you're suggesting, gosh, it's so much fun. You were suggesting that rather than have taxes,
yeah,
simply just allow the Treasury to create money when they go short,
yeah,
and then everybody who's using dollars get a little taxed. That's it.
Correct.
And
we didn't even have an income tax till 1913.
Yeah.
And then it was only on huge fortunes. And it was a rate of about 2%.
So would that be fair if, let's see, somebody making $20,000 a year and they're going to get, let's see, they're and then somebody buying yachts for $2 million, is that kind of an equal thing if you're going to...
Well, yeah, there's no apportionment, because that's really what the 13th Amendment did. They said, well, look, it's okay to charge the rich dude more than the poor dude.
Yeah.
The way the Constitution was written, you know, it didn't matter. 2% on everybody is 2% on everybody. And for the rich guy, it's a lot of money. And for the poor guy, it's a lot of money. Because it's all about...
That. Yeah, that's interesting, yeah.
It's a percentage of what they what they make.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm,
yeah, they didn't give any regard to, oh, he made more, so he should pay more in percentage terms, this graduated system, as we have in some Benelux countries. In Norway, I believe there are tax brackets that are 100%.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, you make you know,
that'll
too
make
much
you
money.
Go out and make a lot of money, right?
There's some incentive. Yeah.
Well, Marge, I think I'm just staying home because you know, what's the
no
point?
Matter what I make, I gotta pay.
What's the point? Yeah. What's the point? Okay, so now we'll do a couple little commercials here, and then we're gonna audit the Fed. Previously, with cancer specialist Dr. Francisco Contreras on rebounding.
There's a study that was done in America with women that exercise 4 hours a week strenuously, and those that did that had 66 less incidence of cancer of the breast than the women that didn't do exercise. That's how impactful exercise can be.
We've been a big fan of rebounding, these little trampolines, for years.
Rebounding is one of the best, because not only is it not as aerobic as many other exercises, but it is, but it also moves the lymph from within your body. And remember that lymph is the one that's bringing out all of the toxins. And if you don't get it up to your heart and then out through the urine, the toxins stay there. So rebounding is an excellent, excellent form of exercise that just about anybody can do. I mean, we have some 85-year-old people that rebound. It's very easy, even for elderly people, to get on the rebounder and just go up and down. It's an excellent exercise.
Certainly is. The Rebound Air Lifetime Warranty Rebounder. Click and order right now. 1RadioNetwork.com. And it's very easy for young kids like me and you to do it too. I like to do the health bounce, and it's really fun. And you can, then when you do jump around, you can get little weights like 2 pounders or 3 pounders and do jumping jacks. I've been experimenting with doing the burst exercise where you run as fast as you can, like a saber-toothed tiger is coming after you. I mean, I'm talking full on for 30 seconds, 45 seconds. You get good. Your heart gets stronger and stronger. You could do that a couple times a day, and in 6 months or so, you could go out and do a marathon. That's how it strengthens your heart, and you can do it right on the rebound, like, it doesn't make that noise. But these are really nice. Lifetime warranty. Check it out, the rebounder. Got an email here from Lee. We've been buying your sulfur from you for about 5 years. My wife loves it, too. Thanks for offering it. Anthony writes, so far, so good. I found the sulfur to be energizing, even on the first small dosage. Here's another one here. This one's really long. Let's see. I was just going to get to a good part. Organic, I'll just read down to the end. I just wanted to tell you that organic sulfur crystals are truly an answer to my prayers and transforming my health. You never know how bad you feel until you experience wellness. Karen C. Wow. I remember the first time I took a little teaspoon of sulfur, maybe 4 years ago. I just got this little, like, supercharged thing. You know, it's kind of a, I mean, this is not going to solve all your problems and cure everything. It's not a magic bullet, but it's a very nice mineral that's, we think, is very, very low in the totem pole in most people. And we're finding out that the glyphosates, which are rampant now, and they're using a lot of glyphosates on even non-GMO products to dry them out before harvest, and they're spraying this stuff that it messes up the sulfur cycle. We're going to be doing a show on that next week with a lady who's been researching glyphosates for about 25 years, Carrie Gillum, award-winning journalist, and she's filing a big a lawsuit. It's a class action going on, and I think the next big trial is tomorrow in California. She's going to be on the show Monday. She's going to tell you some stories about Monsanto and attorneys and glyphosates and what they've been doing that'll just curl your hair. That's Carrie Gillum next Monday at 10 a.m. Anyway, these glyphosates are really not a good thing. They really screw up the sulfur cycle, and sulfur is God's way of helping the body to detoxify, to get rid of yuck stuff. And without that mechanism, you can get pretty sick. So this is a good thing to get. It's organic sulfur. It'll form little crystals in the bottom of the glass. If you leave some there, check it out on our website. Three prices, United States, Canada, worldwide. Also, if you want more than 4 pounds, Andy buys it 9 pounds at a time and spreads it out around his company and family and friends. That's how you can do it too, and you get a discount like Andy. And that's Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com for more than 4 pounds. Okay?
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
But be careful. If you get 9 pounds, you'll start eating sulfur just on a spoon like Andrew without water, which I don't recommend, but he does it. I don't know.
But I chase it with water.
You chase it with water. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you chase it.
To be honest, I washed the nasty taste out of my mouth because that was my reaction when I first tried sulfur. The recommended method, right, is you put a little in a cup of water,
right.
Mix it, and it tasted like
caca.
Poop.
Yeah, don't taste caca.
Yeah, so I tried it on the spoon because I can get it over with quickly. So if you are thinking this is some type of a honey product, your first time you taste sulfur, you'll probably go, oh, this is awful.
Do you know why that is?
I don't care. You know, honestly, it could taste worse than it does, and I would still take it.
No, I understand, but you know, the first time when you, why it's so bitter?
No.
It's because your body needs it, because you don't have a lot of it. It's not used to that taste. But as you take more, now it's not as bitter today after a year or so, is it?
No, I'm used to it, but I follow it with 16.9 ounces water. So,
I remember the first time you took it. Tell them what happened. You called me up, right?
Yeah, you know, it was only Patrick who tells me to do this, and I think, well, Patrick says so, and I respect his opinion so much that I just went ahead and started this product. And the first 3 days I was ill. To be frank, I was ill.
Had a little detox.
I called Patrick. I'm like, Patrick, I feel like I have, like I'm sick. I really feel bad. He said, take more. Take more? Yeah, increase your dosage. Oh, my goodness. So counterintuitive as that was, I followed your advice again. And I must say, after I've been on it for, I don't know how many years now.
A couple now, at least.
Yeah, but I get to taking it for granted. And occasionally I'll miss a morning or miss an afternoon. And not realize that I did until I feel it. I literally feel it.
You can actually feel it.
I can actually think to myself, why do I feel? Let me go find my sulfur.
After you took more on that weekend, how long did it take for you to not feel?
That was pretty quick.
Not feel so yucky.
Yeah, once I was unafraid, thank you, Patrick. Had I been alone on this mission,
would have just stopped it.
Oh yeah, I would have been mortified and stopped.
Would have felt worse.
That would have been. Oh no, I've taken this stuff and now I feel bad. But instead, I powered through and it started to level out. The illness went away, and the bursts of energy that the audience speaks of.
Now you got your staff on it.
everybody I love. You know what? It's like, hey, here, try this. Try this.
I know every time I call and if I ask for you and I talk to Donna, she says, boy, I sure like that sulfur.
You can ask anybody in the company, you know, anybody in any random, call shipping, call maintenance, call anyone in the company and say, yeah, what do you think of the sulfur? And they all have an opinion because they've all been exposed to it. And friends, now I've had a couple of friends and clients that I've offered it to and they gave it back and said, no, not for me.
Tastes too yucky.
Whatever. Whatever makes your boat float, that's my motto. So if you like it and you're with us, well, get on. If not, then find whatever works for you.
Scotch is good. You know, the single malt works.
Yeah.
All right, Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone, and it's the Real World of Money. And so, over the years, this whole out of the Fed idea has come about, but let's just talk about that for a second before we go to the H4-1. Ron Paul was out there, I think, when he was running.
When he was running. And he started as in the Fed.
In the Fed, and then he changed it to audit the Fed. He probably got a phone call in the middle of the night.
As much as I knock the Fed, somebody's got to do that function. And if it wasn't, I just think it would be better performed inside the Treasury. And I've gotten into discussions with very learned people who understand the system and say, oh no, you can't give that responsibility to Congress or to the executive branch, the Treasury, because those folks will just spend money to get themselves reelected. They won't conduct monetary policy in the best interest of the United States. They'll conduct monetary policy in their best interest. And I can understand the argument. I just never have once ever seen the Fed say to a politician, oh no, you can't do that. We're not gonna loan you the money. We're not gonna monetize the debt.
Never turned it down. So, okay, well, let's go to this because I got a lot of questions here. So you're at the H4-1 report, which is, how often do they update this? Weekly?
Oh, yeah. What? And if you're a businessman or a businesswoman and you know how your accountant works, So you take the accountant the shoebox of receipts, and they write down everything that the receipts reveal, mm-hmm. and then they produce a balance sheet, and they hand it to you, and you know what you spent, what you took in, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And that's a traditional audit, right?
Yeah.
However, a forensic audit would be, okay, which numbers, which receipts are you giving us? Okay, well, let's go to the store and see exactly what you bought with the, you know, this receipt.
Is that really home improvement or whatever?
Yes.
That would be a forensic audit.
A thorough. Hmm. It would be much more thorough.
So when we look at these numbers, we don't really know where this money came from,
We know the numbers that were given to the accountant.
Yeah.
And the accountant just wrote them down without bothering to verify.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. So the very top one is Reserve Bank Credit.
Oh, wait. We're going right there?
Right there, dude. Let's go.
What about the national debt?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let me do that.
Sorry.
First. That's all right. That's right.
You know, only because.
National debt.
To the penny.
To the penny.
To the penny.
I got it. It is.
Scary.
Debt to the penny. Open data. Transparency. Treasury.gov. Good for transparency. Where's the number?
$21,044,166,000,000.
See, I don't see that
I could
number.
Keep going to the penny. What? Yes, that's that for those in the audience is treasurydirect.gov.
Oh, I see it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 21044, that number.
That's
166.
The number. Yeah.
21,044,166,000.
Yeah.
166,000.
Correct.
639, I don't know, whatever. Wow.
So for you Trump fans, and I'm one.
Yep.
This president has, in his first year in office, created. $2 trillion or so in additional debt.
Wait a minute. First year has been $2 trillion?
Yeah. Don't you remember when President Obama was leaving, he was just about to break 20. He was at 19 and change.
Well, we're only 21 now.
And so. Change.
Yeah.
Give me the change.
$144 billion.
$44 billion in change.
Right.
Yeah. $21 trillion. Dollars, 21 trillion.
Yeah, but that's only 1.4 trillion. You said two.
Yeah. Right? From 19 to 21, really.
Oh, 19.
From 19 and change to 21 and change. Okay. And one of the nice things about this, and it's also the case as we move forward to look at the H41 release, is the historical data is there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go back and look. So when you hear something, you can say, oh, well, that's. Let's look at what it was 2 years ago, and let's look at what it is now. And so as we move forward to the H41 release, the first thing you'll notice on the release date page is that these data are released each Thursday.
Hmm.
I disagree. I think it should be this data. But, you know, I'll leave that to the English teachers. The Fed says these data.
Well, whatever.
Tomato, tomato.
Tomato, potato.
But you can go as far back as you want. I think 1959 is probably the beginning of this record keeping. Prior to that, this didn't even exist. You know, it was like, what are you even asking us what we're spending money on? Never mind audit. Never mind cursory audit. You don't even ask. Stay away.
And when we started doing radio shows with you in the late 90s, we actually knew exactly what the money supply was.
Ah, that was fun.
The Fed told us. They told us exactly, right?
Because I called them on it.
Until people start talking about it, then all of a sudden they said, no,
all right, we're not going to tell you anymore.
So now we just guess, but you get pretty close, right?
Well, no.
No?
And this is where I've...
You don't?
I can't imagine myself breaking ground in economic theory, but I've never met anyone else who understands the concept, the notion of P, potential money, that the Fed can... really increase or decrease the supply of money at will. So in order to calculate what the money supply might be or could be,
I
had to add together all of the available debt that the Federal Reserve could monetize.
Mm.
And that's where I came up with that concept of P, potential money. And it's a number that you're not prepared for, folks. The next number, by the way, is a quadrillion, So as we look at these balance sheets, we're going to, of course, see that we're in the low single-digit trillions.
Of course. It says chump, chump, chump.
As we add the next series of zeros in our lifetime, we're coming upon this new number, quadrillion. Now, believe it or not, I haven't looked at the next one. What is it? What is that going to be? Quintillion?
I don't know.
Probably quintillion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here we are in quadrillion land.
Okay, so on this balance sheet, we have debits and credits and credits.
As every balance sheet, have pluses and minuses. So looking at the current release, I assume that's what we're doing?
That's what we got, January 12, 2017. Whoops, wait a minute.
Yeah, work your way to the top.
How do I get to current
release? So they release the data tomorrow. So we
Wait a minute, mine says 2017.
Oh, something wrong with yours.
Something wrong with
mine. something wrong.
Let me refresh.
Yes.
How do we get to the current one?
Well,
what did I do wrong here?
Look at the current across the top.
Oh, man, did we put the link on the wrong? Let me see.
God. Factors affecting reserve balances.
Man.
And you want current release.
Let me click on the link on the front page. Maybe I mistakenly put an a moldy oldie up there.
Oh, I hope not. But we can work with a moldy oldie.
Well, no, I want to do a current one.
Yes. Well, if you get to the federalreserve.gov releases / H41.
Sorry, folks. The one I gave you on the front page is a 17. Sorry. How are we going to get to the real one? Sorry.
Well, we're going to go up to our browser. We're going to shave off everything except H41 /
I'm sorry. Okay.
So, folks, if you hit that link, you're looking at an old balance sheet. So if you go up in the top of your browser and delete the excess letters, anything after H41, there's a / H41 / make it just H41, and that'll bring you to the homepage of the releases.
Oh, I got it. And now we have May 3rd, 2018.
Correct. But you see the quick link at the top under factors affecting reserve balances is current release, release dates about announcements and technical Q&As. Right. So you could just hit current release, and that's the link you should put to the
page. I see. Just hit current, and you're there.
Yeah, and you're there. It takes you right there to the current release.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So now we're looking at a balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And they call it the Federal Reserve Statistical Release because it's, you know what they say, there are lies, damn lies, and then statistics, right? Those are the three. Here we are, the Statistical Release.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something on the order of, well, it's not accurate, but it's close enough. And number one is factors affecting reserve balances of depository institutions. And then the next one tells you that this is in millions of dollars. So when you see a figure that looks like 4 million and you think that's not bad, that's 4 million million or 4 trillion, as the rest of us would call it. So they have a tendency to lop the zeros off and report to you what looks like small numbers. You look in that line of numbers, you'll see number like 136 and 42, and you think, what's the big deal? Well, these are millions of dollars, folks. These are millions.
So that's why when we have a $4 billion number with the Reserve Bank credit, it's a $4 trillion.
Correct. Okay. Now, what makes up this Reserve Bank credit?
That's the first line. Let's do it.
Yeah, okay, money available. Well, first of all, let's look at the three lines. So there's $4,325 billion. And then right next to it is a minus $17,737.
Mm-hmm.
And what that column is the change from the week ended April 25th, 2018, or from last week, according to the statistical report, we have $17 billion dollars less in circulation. And from the week ending May 3rd, 2017, on the asset side of the Reserve Bank credit, there's $106 billion less than there was last year this week. So that those columns there, those two columns, are the change from a week ago and the change from a year ago. So as we go down this balance sheet, those two columns will always be the change from a week ago.
Last week and last year, too.
And last year.
Kind of cool. Okay.
So as we work our way down, right. Now that first number one category, they give you the big number. $4,325
billion.
Then they show you, well, what's that made of?
Okay.
Well, $4,155,200,000. That is the securities that they hold outright in their vaults. This is the securities that they purchased through their open market operations and stacked up on their balance sheet. So this is their asset.
So it's $4,155 billion. These securities that they purchased, was all of these securities purchased with newly
created
money?
Correct.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Come on.
Yes.
So they have $4,155 billion pieces of paper.
Down $16 billion from last week.
Who cares? Various.
Down $90 billion from a year ago.
Who cares?
We care because they say to us that we're letting them mature. Don't be afraid of this $4 trillion number, because as they mature, we're just letting them expire. That's it. The money's not going back into circulation. We're reducing our balance sheet. That's the theme or the meme.
In other words, what they're saying is this. Listen, we created this money,
and we bought
some stuff, and we got it in our vault. And when it matures, we're not going to go back to the person, right?
Right.
And ask for the money.
Correct.
Right. We're just going to poof.
Let them mature.
We're just going to take the money in, extinguish it. Put it in the trash can.
Since we created the money anyway,
what do we care, right?
That's called
the balance sheet. What's the term?
Sterilizing?
I guess sterilizing. Okay, whatever. So that's what they say they're going to do, right?
Yes, that's what they've said they're going to do now. Understand that for the last 10 years, they've created this giant pool. Over the last 10 years, they've added this money to circulation. If we were to go back a step and look at the H41 release from 10 years ago, that top number would scarcely be $1 trillion.
Really?
Yeah.
So right before, when the Lehman moment and AIG, the whole Great Recession, the TARP thing, that number was only $1 trillion.
It was less than $1 trillion.
Less than $1 trillion.
Yeah.
Today it's over $4 trillion.
Correct.
That this money came into circulation
through open market operations.
Which is on a Dell computer.
It's a desk with a bunch of traders that are out there buying and selling securities. So this number, security held outright, $4,155 trillion. What is that comprised of? And below that, indented, it tells you. U.S. Treasury securities, $2,405,640,000. Again, down $7 billion from last week, down $60 billion from a year ago. And so then what is the next line?
Let's stop there a second. So these treasury securities are notes or bonds, treasury bonds?
Or bills.
Or bills, okay.
There's your three categories. You see them? Bills, which are short-term, 3 month and 6 month.
They have it broken down here. Sorry.
They have a zero.
Notes, bonds, bills. Okay.
Boom, boom, boom.
So, but this is money that came out of thin air to give to the Treasury,
correct,
the people,
in
that
exchange
we could have created ourselves.
That's right. And I guess we could take a
moment. We have interest payments on $2.2 trillion that we wouldn't really have to have if we just would have printed this money ourselves.
Yes.
I just want to be clear on that.
No, you are clear on that. That's
very clear on that. I'm very clear on that, and it doesn't make me happy.
No, and it shouldn't. And so this this whole indented line, U.S. Treasury securities,
bills. Tells you what it is, bills, bonds,
zero.
Notes.
They have no bills.
Oh, good for them.
Notes and bonds, they have $2,273,000,000, $456 million in these notes and bonds. And when they say their nominal value, that's where we go to the next two categories, notes and bonds, inflation indexed, inflation compensation.
This gets geeky, man.
They either add or subtract from the pool based on, as we've talked about before, when interest rates rise, nominal value falls. When interest rates fall, nominal value rises. So face value is not as important as, hey, what are these bonds yielding versus what the current bond is yielding? If the current bond is yielding more, then these are worth less. If the current bond is yielding less, well, then these are worth more. That's a basic a tenet of the bond market. As interest rates rise, bond values fall. As interest rates fall, bond values rise.
So just as a sidelight, to not get too off track, interest rates are now beginning to rise. The Fed has said they're going to be raising interest rates.
Right.
So bond prices are starting to fall a bit, which is this bond bubble, because they believe then people will start to sell their bonds.
Correct.
Because they think they're going to keep going down in value.
That's right.
And if that happens, well, then the Fed's going to have to buy more of those to keep market from crashing and burning, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. That's the bubble
that
people keep talking about.
Yes.
Okay.
Our next line, you notice, is back indented to the same place that U.S. Treasury securities were, and that's federal agency debt securities. And so that's a total number. $4,391,000,000. These are Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, anything that's a federal agency debt security, mortgage, a federal mortgage.
So this is where the mortgages, the money was created if you bought a home in San Leandro. That's a part of that number, maybe.
No, because this is just the bonds that were issued by Fannie Mae.
Okay. But doesn't Fannie and Freddie back all these notes?
Yeah, but that's not what these are.
Okay.
These are the bonds that the agency themselves issued. What they did with the money is not relevant. What is relevant is that they've issued these bonds.
Oh, so Fannie actually
issues its own bonds.
Issues its own bonds, like
correct,
the Treasury.
Yes.
And then the Fed monetizes the bonds.
Correct.
Oh,
so that category is federal agency debt securities.
Okay.
And there are not many of those on the balance sheet, as you
nothing.
Can see.
Chump
nothing
change. $4 billion.
The next category,
however.
We like
this one. This is a good one.
Yes. These are mortgage-backed securities.
Boy, where do we remember that number?
We've
that
discussed name. This thing at length, but this is basically separate tranches of risk that are rated separately by a rating agency and backed by a pool of mortgages. So these artificial securities are what created the housing crisis of 2008. And in order to put the fire out, the Fed bought them. And these are not backed by any government or any, and many would argue that their value is very dubious, but be that as it may, there's $1.7 trillion in these mortgage-backed securities on the balance sheet of the nation's central bank.
And most of these are from 2007
yes.
period, right?
Yeah, we'll get to that when we get to the bottom, the maturities of these things.
Okay.
So then we go back. You notice we're indented all the way back to the beginning again with the next two items, which are unamortized premiums on securities held outright. So that takes us back to the interest rates rise, bond values fall. Interest rates fall, bond values rise. When the Fed was buying these securities and putting them on the books, as interest rates fell, that number actually went up, the unamortized premium. And then the next line, unamortized discounts on securities held outright, that reflects the other side of the equation. As interest rates rise, the value of their holdings falls. And so in this column, we see that they've already added $152 billion to their balance sheet for premiums, money that they made as the interest rates fell during the period that they were holding these securities. So they've held these things, right, for about 10 years now. And during that 10-year period, interest rates have fallen, and as they did, they added premiums on securities to their balance sheet. And now as interest rates rise, they've added this new line, discounts on securities held
outright. Which is a minus number, minus
13. And it's going to get more minus-y as time goes on. But right now, they take a minus $13 billion this week, which I would question. I think they're being very lenient. And then we go down to the next line. Repurchase agreements, zero. Don't have any repurchase agreements. Now, traditionally, this is how the Fed did its monetary operations. So Lehman Brothers is holding $1 billion worth of treasury bonds that come due in 10 years. And they need money. And they can't go into the marketplace or say to the government, can you pay early? And the marketplace is already tight and interest rates are tight. And rather than upset all that, the Fed says, all right, look, we'll buy those bonds from you today. And then you'll repurchase them from us in a month or 2 months or 6 months. That's a repurchase agreement.
The old repo thing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like cooking the books, but not.
But yeah, short term. Yeah.
Short term cooking that nobody knows.
Yeah. It's not really cooking because it's short term. Okay. So that brings us to the next line item, loans.
Loans.
That's what you get there. There's $125 million in loans.
I don't even understand what that is.
Well, nobody does, and they don't tell you.
What does it even matter?
It could be a loan to their Aunt Susie. Yeah. We would have no way of knowing.
That could be $125 million to Saddam Hussein because he needs a new...
Or to anyone.
Whatever. You know.
Literally.
Nobody would know.
Yeah. Nobody would know, and that's why...
Without a forensic audit, you can't
Correct.
You can't know.
All you see is this line item, loans, $125 million.
That's right. It could have been to Donald Trump's lawyer. Who knows?
It could, yes.
Just kidding. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Okay.
And then we have a new line, net portfolio holdings of Maiden Lane, LLC.
Oh, man, that old Maiden Lane.
And $1.7 billion still.
Who's
As
Maiden
I understood
Lane?
Maiden Lane.
We used to know.
Yeah, well, I only because you have to really dig to find that Maiden Lane is the AIG bailout, the Lehman bailout.
Oh, that's still on the books.
Yeah, they had to actually buy this or create this corporation and then buy the holdings of the corporation. Just to give it some substance or value. Well, in reality, that's all just bad debt. $1.7 billion. And they just chunk it down a little bit at a time. But I found it curious that it's a plus. Did you notice how it's up $3 billion from last week?
Well, with
and up $5 billion
when you have
from
a line item like that, just throw stuff in there.
Yeah, I suppose.
Right, you know.
Yeah.
Right?